It's 8:15 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. Joining me on the phone, I have Summit County Council Member David Uhr. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning.
Well, let's start off. The council unanimously approving the wilderness proposal, nearly 24,000 additional acres besides what we have now. You were on the advisory committee that worked out the map there, but what can you do in wilderness in terms of say, watershed management?
Well, that was the whole debate right there, Leslie. You can't, under certain circumstances, if you get permission from the regional forester, you can enter the wilderness area under certain conditions, but that's not been taking place in the past, and it's almost exactly the same thing as roadless area. The wilderness area is there to be undisturbed by mankind, letting nature take care of whatever course takes place, whether it's the bugs or whether it's a fire or whether it's flooding or whatever it might be. Man is not to set foot in there with mechanical machinery or anything like that, or even nor are they able to do controlled burns. It's to be Mother Nature's way of existence is what it's supposed to be, Leslie.
So some concern there, I mean, especially with timber management. I mean, what if in the future we have more dry summers like we're expecting now?
In the wilderness area, that's the way it'll be. In the roadless area, which is what we were able to put some special management areas into, one particular area is that we can go in and manage that watershed. And if we have to go in and put some timbering in there or other things in there or go in and repair some riparian areas in roadless area, we can do it under the guidelines of watershed management. That, in my opinion, is really the only thing that Summit County and the Wasatch Front got out of this, was to be able to go in and manage the watershed in some of these roadless areas under very strict directions is how we do it. And the roads that we build to go in there and do these things can only exist for, I think, a three-year period of time. Then they have to be covered back over or closed up or something like that. So that's what we got out of that.
Yeah, and given the state's desires, I don't know how you feel about the issue to take over these federal lands. How do you feel about that? You think that's the right thing to do?
I think you need to sit down and analyze everything there. I don't know that that'll ever take place on the Lord's green earth that we ever get the federal lands back. We can talk about it all we want to, but I don't believe that the Congress is ever going to do it unless you go to court and say the Supreme Court does this. Under the Enabling Act, it's never going to take place. So I think there's a lot of talk about nothing, and if you and I live long enough, I don't think anything will still be done.
All right. So are roads allowed in wilderness areas? If so, what kind?
No, there are not roads allowed in wilderness area. There may be roads allowed in roadless area, but not wilderness. And the wilderness area that has been designated right now do not have any roads in them that I am aware of. Now, I might be speaking out of tune on that, but to my knowledge and to my discussions that we had here, that's one of the reasons why that land was designated as wilderness, because there were not roads in it. It's kind of a complicated thing to really get out and understand unless you're right there and you watch it. But there's just not a lot that you can do in wilderness other than back camp or backpack and ride horses. That's really about all you can do in it, Leslie.
Well, I'm confused then. I mean, a roadless area can have roads?
Only the existing roads in them right now. As I said before, a couple of the areas that we put into a special management area, which are designated roadless, we can build roads in there, but only for a period of 3 years and only for the purpose of preserving watersheds. When you preserve watershed, we might have to go in and cut some trees. We might have to go in there and repair some riparian areas and stuff like that. But it's only for a short period of time, and it's only to make the watershed more healthy to hold the water up there longer and to not allow erosion to take place. So I think I've hit pretty well the high points of both the roadless and the wilderness area on that, Leslie. I don't know if I can explain it any better.
Yeah. So what about the existing grazing allotments for sheep and cattle?
That is a good question. The The agreement that we voted on last night is that the present existing grazing permits will continue under management. I guess the biggest argument that we had is that the bighorn sheep up there that were transplanted in there about 10, 15 years ago have been migrating over into where the domestic sheep are. And there's been accusations back and forth as to who starts pneumonia in the bighorn sheep, or was it domestic sheep that brought it in? But anyway, the agreement says that the Fish and Wildlife, the grazers, the permittees will sit down and work out whatever's in the best interest of the permit. There was language in there that says that the number of animal units will be maintained. If there's any transfers to be taking place between one generation to another, or they're selling it out to one person or another person, is that those animal units will be transferred without any haircuts or anything like that. So, in my opinion, I think we guaranteed the domestic sheep herders up there the right to maintain those grazing permits up there as long as they're maintained in a proper and manageable way. So that was the big thing that the ranchers and the grazers were after, was a guarantee up there that they were not going to be cut off in a couple of years with a drought or whatever it might be. I mean, they might have to be cut back for a year, but they have the right to maintain whatever grazing permits are in place right now.
So who represents the stakeholders in Wyoming? You seem to hear different opinions from the man representing Uinta County and another guy from something called the Coalition of Local Governments.
that was the big question. We had a letter from Uinta County, Wyoming. We had pretty strong... We didn't have it in writing, but we had some pretty strong conversations from the person representing the U.S. Congress back there from Wyoming, saying that these are the people who are going to be there. They were also permittees that were there that other sheep grazers and cattle owners had kind of appointed them to be there. The land coalition you were talking about, there was only one very small portion of ground that laid in Summit County. All the rest of those grounds that they were talking about were either in Daggett, Uinta County, or in Wyoming. And so the people that came to the table from Wyoming, we thought they had representation or authority to be representative of the people over in Wyoming. And they were the ones that sat down and did the negotiating and negotiated in good faith with the environmentalists. And those are the ones that we brought to the table and ended up voting for what they worked out with the environmentalists.
All right. One lady from Wyoming criticized the deal. You asked her, do you want to win the battle or win the war? What did you mean by that?
Well, the votes were on the advisory committee to totally throw the environmentalists out the door and not even listen to them. And we could have come in there and said, okay, we're going to take away the designation of roadless on these thousands of acres here, and we're only going to give you 5,000 acres of wilderness. And we could have won that probably at the advisory committee. But when it came to the council, I don't know if it would have passed or not. Maybe we could have gotten enough votes on the council to do that. But I do know that when it went to Washington, it would have failed miserably. It was about a 4 or 5 way poker game in what we were trying to do. We have to have the environmentalist backing in Congress in order to get anything passed. Well, if they're going to vote for it, they're going to have a say, which is only right. And that's what I kept saying to them, is that we can win the battle here today in Summit County, but when we get back to Washington, we're going to lose the entire war. And I'm tired of doing nothing with our watersheds in Summit County. And I'm willing to sit down and deal in good faith with any of the environmentalists. And they dealt in good faith. They were good people. They came, as Joe Hickey said, who was one of the ranchers, he says, I learned a lot from sitting down and having a conversation with them as to why they think the way they do. And they learned from me. It was extremely a good opportunity to express viewpoints, to understand where everyone else is coming from. And we negotiated a good deal to the best of our ability with everyone, nobody totally happy, but everyone satisfied that had an equal opportunity of winning.
So
and that's what I meant.
You sound optimistic then that the proposal will pass with Congress.
There's about five other issues here. If it were just Summit County's issue by itself, I would say yes. But we are also dealing with Daggett County. We are dealing with Duchesne County. We're dealing with Uinta County and Emory County. And then 50% of the bill is a exchange between the Ute Indians out in the Uinta Basin and settler ground and also federal ground. That right now is the stumbling block, is trying to bring the Indian reservation on board and satisfy what they want in negotiation with CITLA. If it was just Summit County by itself, yes, I would say we could go through Congress without even a negative vote, because I think we have negotiated very well with the environmentalists and they in turn with the ranchers and the farmers.
All right.
I think it's been a very good template for the rest of the nation to follow, to be honest with you.
Real quick, in the staff report, there's a reference to a land exchange and a BLM parcel in the Snyderville Basin. Can you tell me what that's about?
There's 40 acres, right, 40 acres of BLM ground just on the very borders of Promontory. It's just kind of like a sore thumb sticking out there, and we thought that that would be an issue that we could bring into public lands here in Summit County, either under us or under Park City, and make sure that we control that there's open space down the road. So that's what that was all about. It was very, very small part. No one even thought much about it. We were more occupied with the north slope up there. But that's what that was about, Leslie.
Okay. Real quick, some other topics. The council approved the health educator position. Director Rich Bullis says this is needed to address some health issues on the east side, like obesity. Do you agree?
Yeah, I do. There's not that many people on the east side anymore that really go out and do physical work in agriculture. And we are at the kitchen table or at the desk as much as anybody else is anymore. And we're always kind of thinking that we're rural over here and we work hard. Well, there's not five kids in our school over here that go out and really work on the farms. So, yes, I do agree with Rich on that.
All right. You asked if the county health is addressing the increasing popularity of e-cigarettes. What are you seeing here?
Well, let me tell you what I do see. I go to this time of year. I go up to the ranch I have in Idaho, and I go right past the e-cigarette shop in Evanston, and I see cars lined up there, parked right there, you know, from early in the morning until late at night. And also, a good share of those cars also have Utah license plates on them. I don't know if the standards up there are any easier to get them than they are down here, but I do know that's what I see. I also know from reading the paper that, and the legislature is that the e-cigarette is growing so fast. Rich Molo gave some statistics yesterday that I would thought were extraordinarily high. And so it's a growing issue, and I think we need to educate our young people and educate people that they're just, the nicotine and that stuff is just like cigarettes.
Okay. I know that the council also discussed the goals of the strategic plan. Wanted to talk to you just about one of those, the economic development there on the east side. While you were discussing this, council was saying that they couldn't get pizza during the break because Colville's Pizza Place went out of business. So what's the message there?
The message is that, first of all, let me be a little critical. People in Colville need to patronize their own establishments there in Colville itself. But at the same time, we can't force cities to do economic development without them willing to step to the table. We can, as the old saying goes, you can lead the horse to water, but you can't make him drink. That's what the county is trying to do, the council is trying to do, is provide the opportunity for any city to step forth, tell us what they want to be, and we'll work hard to make them what their dream is. That's what we were trying to establish in that goal. Some of the cities are taking this up, some of the cities are not. So that was a justification in putting that as one of our PowerPoints in that kind of disclosure there.
All right. And under that plan, there was also a recommendation that two council members meet with mayors once a year. Should those meetings be more often?
They are open to the public. We go there. We have met with Hennifer. We've met with Colville. We've met with Oakley in the last 30 days. And what we've done is gone into their normal council meeting, discussed our issues, taken what requests they had from them, and had a very pleasant conversation of what we can and cannot do for them and likewise with them. So they're totally open to the public. The one question that came up is maybe annually is not enough. Maybe it'll be twice a year. And I do agree with that. I think it should be twice a year. Plus, also, we have the Council of Governments that's supposed to be every quarter. But we have been very faithful in keeping those going because people have gotten busy and we haven't had a quorum. So communication is a key to all these municipalities.
And finally, the council made two appointments to the Eastside Planning Commission. You reappointed Doug Clyde and added Louise Willoughby. Tough, given that you had 20 people to choose from?
I thought it was a very strong message being sent from the North Summit area to the council is that we want to control our own destiny also. We want to have input on it. And people rose to the level. We had some very good people interview for that. And Louise is the one that came out with the top vote, but there very easily could have been four or five others that very easily could have taken the seat with Louise. But that was who the council went with, and I'm very happy and support her in seating her tonight. I thought North Summit sent a very good message to us.
Okay, Dave, anything else you wanted to mention?
One last thing. People that own dogs that aren't on leashes, they need to be careful because if they bite someone, there's going to be some pretty good liability there. Also, the animal control people are going to be out citing people. We have had at least three bites in the county in the last 2 weeks, and I would strongly encourage people to adhere to the leash laws. The excuse that you don't know about them isn't going to hold a lot of water. So that would be my last advice, not trying to be threatening, but trying to keep people from getting bit. So that would be my counsel, Leslie.
Okay, David, thank you for your time.
Good luck to you. Thank you.
It's Dave, your Summit County Council. KPCW News Time now, 8:32. KPCW News Time now is 8:33. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, even though it was a unanimous decision by government officials, there were a few quiet dissenters over the gondola connection between Park City Mountain Resort and Canyons Resort. They join me now on the phone as well as in the studio. Good morning to Brandon Mullman. He's in the studio with me. Also on the phone, I have Michelle Dietrich and Jen Seaberry. Good morning to all of you.
Good morning.
All right. Well, thanks for joining me this morning. I mean, given some of the really rather mean anonymous comments online, I think you have to be admired for at least speaking up and signing your name to some thoughtful conclusions. From any of you, any regret that you have spoken up, given kind of the widespread support that we see for the gondola connection?
No.
Brandon, you want to start?
Yeah, I don't have any regrets. I mean, I think it's a neat project. I'm excited to see it go in. I just think that it maybe lacks a little bit of creativity and a vision as far as where the gondola actually takes you, where it kind of lets you off over there in a bunch of multi-million-dollar homes on the side of on the south end of Canyons, and it kind of puts you in Nowheresville as far as a skier goes.
We'll talk a little bit more about that, Brandon. Michelle, any regret, though, given some of the, what
no,
we've seen?
No, no regrets at all. I think there's people that are still in Park City that are here to enjoy it and not exploit it. And I feel like that lift is about marketing and real estate. It's not about skiing. And it destroys the last pristine ridge that we can see from the town. There's no, right now on that ridge, there's no lifts, no road cuts, and no houses. And it's the only one left. And I think it's sad to break that up for something that's really not about skiing. It's about servicing wealthy homes, and it's about being able to say the biggest ski resort in the U.S.
Yeah. And for you, Jen, I mean, what about you? Any regrets that you've stood up?
I was a little bit scared and intimidated, but I understand it's a mostly a done deal, but I just kind of wanted to speak to make sure that we understand. I think that I think that people need to kind of think that maybe open space and benefits of town sometimes more than more development and more lifts and. I think that in the long run, it will probably be nicer. We'll be happier to have open space.
Yeah. So, Brandon, as you mentioned, you had said that you're really not opposed to the connection, just really where it connects at Canyons. Certainly, I've heard concerns over the terminus there at Park City Mountain Resort, given how crowded it is already there at the Silver Load Lift where this would end. But why doesn't the end of canyons near that flat iron chairlift make sense for you?
You know, I think that it's just it takes forever to get over there from the canyon side. You know, if you start in the parking lot, it takes 4 chairlifts to ride over to get to that gondola terminal. And, you know, on the Park City side, it's just 1 chairlift. You know, you can hop right on Crescent and ski down to the bottom of Silver Load, and there you are. And I think that that is going to pull a lot of people from Park City Mountain Resort to come over to Canyon. So, you know, it's probably going to make parking even worse over here. But I just don't see, you know, many people coming over to Park City Mountain Resort from Canyons, because it's kind of a schlep to get over there. And that, you know, maybe if they, you know, extended the gondola by another 3 or 4 chairs, they could land that in a part of the mountain that actually, you know, puts you in a good spot to get to good skiing.
Mm-hmm. Would it have made sense to have even looked at the lower parking lot?
Possibly. I mean, that would be a good spot to start it as well.
Yeah. And Michelle, you're a teacher at Treasure Mountain. Basically, you say that the gondola doesn't offer a lot of skiing and really no benefit with regard to the transit. So, again, it's all just about marketing and getting more people on the slopes?
I mean, I think that's what it's about. You know, they want to say they're the biggest resort, but they're really 2 resorts and with a real estate gondola in between. And I think it's, in order to say that or to have that kind of marketing to destroy a beautiful spot, I just don't see the reason behind it. And I just think it's sad. I think that we're not going to know what's gone, or we're not going to realize how important it is until it's gone, when we start seeing the road cuts and the gondola up there. So
would a different alignment, again, have made a difference?
I mean, if they're going to connect the two, they're still going to go over the that ridge, and they're still going to destroy a lot of beautiful area that animals enjoy and hikers enjoy. So I don't know. I mean, it would take a lot of planning, and it would probably take more than 1 lift to go around. And I think the back ridge is not owned by private land, so they would have a hard time getting it through anywhere else.
Mm-hmm. So no new parking was required as part of this. Resort's just saying that this is a transit lift. Do you all agree with that? I mean, should we have required more parking, since it's going to attract more skiers, given that it is the largest resort in the country?
I think more parking would have been good. I feel like that's kind of on the horizon anyway. I mean, it seems like we're maxed out for parking over there, and that, you know, really the only solution to that is to build a new parking structure that goes down into the ground and that can accommodate a lot of vehicles, but, you know, doesn't stick way up in the air so that it's visible from everywhere. And I know that Vail has a parking structure like that in their own town. You know, it goes down maybe 6 or 7 levels. It's pretty large, and it only sticks up 1 or 2 levels above the ground. So it's, it doesn't take up the landscape down there, but it certainly provides a lot of parking, and it just seems like that's where we're going to need to go here as well, you know, sooner or later.
Yeah, Jen or Michelle, any comment on that?
They definitely need more parking. I believe, and I don't want to quote him incorrectly, but I believe Mr. Carrig said that they don't need more parking, so they'll just park people at the canyons and they'll be able to get over to Park City. But there's really not that much parking at the canyons either. It'll max out very quickly if they bring more skiers into the area. And so, yes, parking is very necessary, and that wasn't any requirement, and I think that's not showing much foresight by the Planning Commission on that one.
All right. And then, Jen, just to expound a little bit on your concerns, I mean, you think bigger and cheaper appeals to a lot of people, but that's not what Park City's about, huh?
I just wonder if we're going to alienate some of our longtime visitors and locals by making everything kind of just a big, one big real estate ski area. Instead of, I think Park City still maybe has a little bit of the kind of Wild West local feel. You know, you're not skiing under bridges and by hotels, and it. I think that maybe some people will think that they'll miss that.
So in the long run, we would have been better off just leaving it the way it was.
I think just having the separate identity of the areas was kind of nice, and I think there are a lot of kind of people who could choose what they really wanted from a ski area instead of having to have it all one big conglomerate now.
Yeah, and so then when you hear comments, or at least read comments, you know, saying, well, you know, it's if you don't like it, move to Montana. I mean, how do you respond to those people?
You know, I'm not sure that's the answer for dialogue.
It doesn't leave a lot of room for discussion, does it?
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the people that are here to make money instead of here for Park City have a lot of influence, and they're the ones that make a lot of noise. And the people that are here to just enjoy the place kind of want to just sit back and enjoy the place. And so they don't speak out as much.
Yeah, as I mentioned, you all submitted written comments to the Planning Commission. I mean, do you think it would have made a difference if you had been shown up in person? Anyone?
I would have really liked to show up in person. I couldn't that night, and that's kind of why I wrote ahead. I just kind of wanted my comment. I even asked if it could be read out loud to everybody, and I don't think that happened. But, I just wanted to sound off since I couldn't be there in person.
Yeah, and either of you, I mean, have you had any response from anybody?
I've had a lot of positive comments. Thank you for speaking up. Thank you for saying that. And like I said, a lot of people don't take the time to write a letter or go to the meetings. And, they don't have time. We're trying to make a living here. And so I think I got a lot of positive feedback, not from the Park Record blog, but definitely from locals and friends.
Yeah. Any comment from you, Jen?
Same, I think when you just talk to people on airplanes and lifts, they're kind of thinking the way we are, but not maybe saying so much because it's, a lot of them work for the ski areas and stuff.
Yeah. All right. Any other thoughts from any of you?
No, but thanks for talking to us.
Yeah, sure. Jen, anything else?
And nothing from me, nope.
And Brandon?
No, I just think that we need to, keep an eye on Vail and continue to keep the dialogue open with them and make sure that our input is heard. And, hopefully they will, listen and make some changes that are good for everybody and not just kind of plow ahead with their own vision.
All right. Well, Brandon Malman, Michelle Dietrich, and Jen Seaberry, thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks, Leslie.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's 8:44 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. The Utah Child Protection Registry is warning parents about the risks of sharing photographs and personal information about their children online. On the phone with me with more details, I have the spokesperson for the Utah Child Protection Registry, Evelyn Everton. Good morning, Evelyn.
Hi, Lisa.
It's Leslie. Yeah. So tell me, start by telling me, what is this Utah Child Protection Registry?
Sure. So it's actually a free program for Utah parents. They can actually go online to the website. It's donotcontact.utah.gov, and they can register their email addresses and their cell phone numbers, and that will prevent any kind of adult-oriented marketing. So we're talking alcohol, tobacco, pornography, illegal drugs, gambling, any of those things that are illegal for minors to purchase, it will actually stop those marketers from soliciting to their email inboxes and to their cell phones.
Oh, okay. So it's kind of like the national do not call thing, huh?
Absolutely. It's actually modeled after that program, but it extends it to our electronic contact points instead of just our home phones.
All right. So when we talk about the dangers and the risks of sharing photographs and personal information about children, I mean, what is the concern?
Sure. So we live in a social world. Parents really want to be able to share those milestones and those things that their children are doing. But I think that parents just need to be aware of what those risks are when they are sharing that personal information online. And a couple of those things that we have seen and have reports of is that as one of the things we're seeing recently is something called digital kidnapping. And that's where photos of other children are actually being used by other people. And they're kind of pretending like they're actually their own children. And, when you stumble across someone else using your pictures, it's a very kind of uncomfortable feeling, and it makes you feel a little bit like you've maybe been violated. And so that's something that parents should be aware of. Also, we've seen these pictures being taken and being targets of cyberbullying and internet jokes, which isn't something anyone wants their child to grow up and look back at their kind of digital footprint and see that they have this out there online.
Yeah. So is there any way to find out for parents if their children's photos are being kidnapped?
Absolutely. There's a couple of things that parents can do. They can actually do on the Google search, you'll see there'll be a little kind of a picture icon on the side. Instead of just doing a regular text search, you can actually do an image search on Google and put your pictures in there. And it will look and see if those photos are being used anywhere else on any other social media platforms. That's one way that they can at least find out that maybe that if they're being used or not. Another way is to protect yourself, to maybe to prevent it from even happening in the first place, is just really be careful about what your settings are on your social accounts. If they are, make sure they're set to private so that only people that you know and trust can see your posts.
Okay, so that will make a difference then, those privacy settings?
Absolutely, yes. I mean, if you set it so that it's only people that you know, then those are the only people that will be able to see that. Also, just be careful about who you allow to be your friends or who you allow to follow you on these social media platforms. I would suggest to parents only letting those people that you know and trust be your friend.
All right. Now, if a parent or their child has been a victim of this digital kidnapping, I mean, what can you do about it?
So all of the social media sites are aware that this is actually a problem. It's actually pretty common, which is concerning. But so they do have the ability to, if you allow or let the social media platform know what's going on, that these pictures have been used against without your consent, then they will remove the pictures. And a lot of times they'll actually delete the account that's using them.
So I don't understand why strangers would want to use photographs of children who aren't theirs.
I mean, I think there's a host of reasons. I was a victim of this. We found a few other Facebook accounts, and one was using my photos and then also had set up other accounts using my children's photos. And we came to find out that it was actually a friend of my daughter who's in high school. And till this day, I still don't really know why she decided to do it. I don't know if it's a way to kind of become someone else or to feel like you're filling these other roles. I do know that there's this new trend online called baby role play, where people will take other pictures of people's babies and actually pass them off on their own. I'm not sure the site calls you behind it, but yeah, it's something to maybe kind of, create this kind of false life online.
Wow. Are there any laws against doing things like that?
There really aren't any laws. It's really up to the parents to just be diligent, to be kind of watching and making sure that this isn't happening. And then, like I said, letting those social media platforms know that this is happening. One of the other things that they can do is there are these free watermarking apps that you can actually kind of copyright your pictures. So that makes it a lot more difficult for people to be able to just kind of copy and paste and take them off your sites and use them elsewhere.
Ah, okay. And even though you haven't paid for the copyright, you can still sort of put the copyright on it and it's I guess it's just warning enough.
Right. And, you own those photos. If you take them and, you're the person who actually was the photographer of those pictures, you own those by the copyright laws. So you have the ability to actually copyright anything that you've taken.
All right. People would like more information. Is there a website they can go to or?
Sure. For more information on the Utah Child Protection Registry, they can go to donotcontact.utah.gov.
All right. Well, thanks for your time this morning, Evelyn. Good information.
Thank you so much. We appreciate it.
That's Evelyn Everton, again, with the Utah Child Protection Registry.